I'm Niamh Cassidy, a former social care worker who, after having my own children, found a calling as a childbirth educator and lactation consultant. Back when I started this journey, I faced the same challenges many of you might be experiencing right now, struggling to get enough clients to make my business viable long term. I knew in my heart that I had the skills and knowledge to make a difference, but the thought of marketing and selling left me feeling a bit uneasy. I didn't want to compromise my authenticity and values just to attract clients. I invested in trainings and mentorships, and I tried various strategies that I learned, but it often felt like I couldn't implement a lot of it because what I was being taught didn't match my values as a birth and postpartum worker. That's when I decided to take matters into my own hand. I embarked on a mission to learn, to experiment, and to find ethical and authentic ways to share my expertise, support my clients, and build a sustainable practice. Today, I'm proud to say that I run a thriving private practice, and I'm here to share my insights with all of you to help you to do the same. Join me on this journey as I help you bridge the gap between your passion for supporting new parents and the success you deserve. Together, we'll discover the power of ethical, authentic, and effective approaches, not only to make a living, but also to make a positive impact in the world of birth and postnatal care. Let's get started on this empowering journey together. Welcome back to everyone to this episode of the Pregnancy and Postnatal Entrepreneurs Collective podcast. I'm your host, Niamh Cassidy, and today I have with me Rebecca Redden, who is a counselling psychologist and a perinatal specialist. And Rebecca and I are going to discuss vicarious trauma, which is a very serious subject, but also something that we really need to focus on and learn more about and how we can protect ourselves and what to do if we do experience this. So Rebecca, maybe you'd like to tell people a little bit more about yourself.
Marvelous. Thanks, Niamh. I appreciate it. And I'm so delighted to be here talking about this really important topic. A little bit of background on me. I am, as you mentioned, a counseling psychologist. I've been in the field since 2009, working specifically with women from the very beginning. But my passion really lied in that perinatal work and supporting moms and navigating pregnancy, that postnatal period, and all of the challenges that we can experience, both normal, clunky, and maybe some mental health challenges as well. So I've been doing that specifically in my private practice since 2014, providing both individual and couples counseling. And along the way, because I specialize in this area and I've done extensive training in all of the factors that impact this period, I've had a lot of birth workers come through my door. I've had a lot of people showing up who want someone they don't have to explain all of the ins and outs of the process to, who might have experienced a traumatic birth, who are experiencing compassion fatigue or vicarious trauma or burnout in that. And so I'm really delighted to be here today and be able to share some of the information I share on an individual basis with your listeners, because I think there can be great benefit from that.
Absolutely. And it really is something that can impact birth and postpartum workers because of things that they might witness or because of holding that space for parents who might be experiencing hard times themselves. And I'm a qualified social care worker, and I spent most of my career before doing this in social care work. And we were taught about trauma, and we were taught about vicarious trauma, and we had support and supervision around the work that we did. But many people in this space don't have that. So it can be a really tricky thing, and people might not even know what the term means. So maybe could you explain what vicarious trauma actually is?
Wholeheartedly, 100%. I think the word trauma in general gets used a lot, and we don't really know what are we actually talking about there. When we're talking about trauma in general, we experience something as traumatic when there is a fear of impact on our physical or psychological safety, where we are really thrown back into that fight-flight response, where our brain feels like it has to protect ourselves from a bear, and we don't feel like we can, so we feel stuck or trapped in that, and our body just responds in a very specific way. I'll talk through all of the signs and symptoms of what that is. What's interesting is that we often think about trauma as something that we experience and then we have the impact on us, and we absolutely can. But included in trauma and in post-traumatic stress disorder is this element of vicarious trauma. And vicarious trauma is when we experience either witnessing a traumatic event, someone else going through something, which we know as birth workers, who are often in the midst of a really challenging experience for someone else, mm-hmm. and we might be really involved in that. But also it can come from listening to or being witness to the stories of other people's traumatic experiences, which even if we aren't present for a traumatic birth or maltreatment, we might be that safe person in that postnatal period that we hear the stories of that. And because all the birth workers that I know all come into this work because they have so much empathy, mm-hmm. compassion, and desire to help, we get emotionally invested. But that does open us up to the dangers of vicarious trauma, where we start maybe reliving, re-experiencing, or having the side effect of being emotionally invested in someone else's trauma.
Absolutely. And I think you made a really important point there, because sometimes it's witnessing the direct event mm-hmm. happening, and but sometimes it is. It's hearing the stories. The main work yeah. that I do is in lactation, and mm-hmm. nearly the first 20 minutes of a consult is pretty much hearing the birth story yes. and how people, some people give all of that to me, and mm-hmm. some people hold some of it back. And obviously there are some wonderful mm-hmm. stories, but there are hard stories as well. And when we're holding space for people like that, we are at mm-hmm. risk of mm-hmm. this vicarious traumatic happening to us.
Absolutely. And I will say that I've had several IBCLCs, lactation consultants, come through my door where they have heard and witnessed these stories. Mm-hmm. And that transition when we are meeting with a lactation consultant is such a tender, vulnerable space mm-hmm. that, you know, that might be that one person we feel like can really understand, and we want to process that, talk it through. And if we don't have the skills, tools, and knowledge of what to do with that, we can feel really overwhelmed by the really intense stories we might be hearing.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell me, from your experience, is it also, in a way, dose respondent, as in the more of it that happens?
Yes, absolutely. And the research actually does show this specifically for those in birth work, that the more our risk for development of vicarious trauma actually goes up with one, either the number of births we might be attending or the number of clients we are seeing in that perinatal period, mostly connected to the fact that our likelihood of hearing those traumatic stories does go up. But also, we might, if we are attending a ton of births, or if we are experiencing a ton of those lactation appointments in a row, we might not have that time to process what we are hearing, to kind of deal with the emotional impact of that. We might not have as great self-care in between because we're really busy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, in really basic terms, what can people do to protect themselves from the impact of this work?
Absolutely. Luckily, there's a lot. There's absolutely a lot that we can do. And some of it does come down to kind of that good self-care component. When we are more well-resourced, it's a little bit like if my bucket is really full, if I have a lot of resources, it's much easier to be in that give mentality. I can give more, and it doesn't drain my own resources. But if my bucket is really empty and I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel, it's much easier to get a bit into a take mentality, where we feel like we are protective of those resources. So we want to look at how we can really fill that bucket of good self-care. I'm a big believer that the term self-care has been pretty hijacked. We think we need a spa day or we need to spend a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But actually there's four components of self-care that are most powerful, that if we're kind of checking these four boxes, they're really effective ways to fill that bucket. One is body care, so caring for our physical self, sleep and exercise and movement and maybe a massage or a really hot shower, a nice cup of tea. The other things are feelings of accomplishment. Where in our life do we feel like we are accomplishing something, doing something that matters, purpose-driven work? We then have connection, which we know specifically connection with other birth workers is really protective. We can hear our stories in other people's experiences and know we're not alone in that. And then last, enjoyment, things that we do just because we like doing them for no other reason. It's not to serve anyone else, which especially when there's such a need in birth work, we can be pouring a lot into that.
I think that breaking down self-care is such an important thing, because as you said, the term is thrown around as if it's something easy, you know, or that if it's something, like you said, oh, just take yourself off to the salon or, you know, that type of thing, when really there's so much more to it. And I think so many of us, myself included, neglect that first step to looking after your body. And I know for me this year, this is my thing. So my thing is now to get strong and feel strong and healthier. And when our bodies feel good, that cup is so much fuller. It's so much easier to give out of it. And I heard a lovely quote from Oprah, I think it was. And she says, you know, your cup has to be overflowing. It needs to be pouring into the saucer. And you're giving everybody what's in the saucer. You're not giving them from your cup. And I thought that was really nice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This idea that when we are abundant in our energy and our purpose and our drive, it's so much easier to feel energized, excited, motivated for the work that we are doing and the things we choose to pour our energy into. We also know that things like self-awareness, are you checking in regularly with how you're feeling about the work that you're doing? We can experience things like compassion fatigue when our bucket is empty and we're pouring continuously from it. Are you checking in and being aware of, oh, I'm feeling a little bit drained. I'm feeling a little irritated by my client rather than really wanting to support them? Or am I dreading some of those appointments rather than having that excitement? Keeping an eye out for some of those signs and symptoms. If we want to talk specifically about what we can do around protective factors for self-care, a balanced caseload is huge. Thinking about, are we dealing with a cohort, a population that experiences a lot of trauma? There is a lot of maltreatment. Are we working in a hospital setting where there might be a different number of factors we're experiencing in our workday today? Are we doing all crisis appointments as a lactation consultant? The more balanced we have from kind of those intense or crisis appointments or clients, and some of those more, there's some breathing room here, is going to help us be able to spread the impact out quite a bit more. We also know that training, knowledge about this exactly, listening to something like this actually is a protective factor if we can label it and know what it is. And then the ability to debrief and talk to someone who understands afterwards is huge.
Absolutely. And you mentioned, so with the debriefing is one part, and also the community, you know, coming together. And I know in social care as well, when we did group supervision, some of the risks or the things that had to be managed within group supervision were that it didn't just become a very negative space where people only spoke negatively either about their work or what they were going through, that there needed to be some level of balance. And I worry a little bit sometimes that there's a lot of negativity creeping into the birth world, and you might see a lot of it on social media where advocacy against, you know, bad practices is important, but if we live in a tunnel of just constant negativity around the birth world, that can actually be very difficult for our psychological wellness.
100%. And actually, you know, if we are looking at the full scope of what can lead to vicarious trauma, actually witnessing these things in media, on television, in maybe the newsletters and social groups we're in, we can experience vicarious trauma if that information is directly connected to the work we're doing, which it very well could be in this. So if we're constantly barraged by that negativity, worst case scenarios, really challenging experiences, that can absolutely contribute to the development of vicarious trauma.
So we need to be careful when coming together as a community to support each other in how that support looks, would you say?
100%. And there's a couple of things when we're building that community that has been found to be most helpful. One, people who are in a kind of similar space who can relate, it's really powerful to not have to explain everything. We might feel a little resistance to telling a friend who's not in this all of the kind of things we're going through because we have to explain everything. We have to talk them through and they might not understand why something is impacting us as much as it is. We also know that having people who have had more experience is really helpful. There is some interesting research that we can see the development of compassion fatigue on average about 3 years into our journey into birth work. That's a really common period to experience that compassion fatigue, even if it's not connected to vicarious trauma. And so having people who have overcome that kind of hump or challenge in their journey and come out stronger, that's a really big benefit. Someone who can say, it's hard right now, but it's going to get better. That exactly like you talked about with social work, that supervision, that mentorship is hugely protective. Also making sure that it is not only just kind of bashing or giving out about the system, making sure that we remind ourselves why we choose to do this work. We are creatures of purpose. We need to remind ourselves why we put ourselves in sometimes challenging situations because we are passionate, motivated, excited about the work that we do.
Absolutely. And that's really, it's really nice to be reminded of that and to remind people to think about why we do the work that we do. So we've gone through a little bit about how to prevent vicarious trauma. But if someone is experiencing it, what might that look like? And then what can they do to get to recover from that?
Absolutely. And I think that this is the piece that is most valuable. Oftentimes, we're not really aware of what the signs and symptoms are of vicarious trauma. And we tend to push them off as, oh, I'm just stressed. I'm just tired. I'm just a bit overwhelmed. It's a hard season. Of course, I keep thinking about that experience. It was really tough. But if we can know the difference between, oh yeah, that emotionally impacted me, which many of the pieces of work we do will because of that empathy, that is a really good trait. And when it has stepped over that line of vicarious trauma, this is really helpful. So vicarious trauma is identified by a specific number of symptoms. The most common one is that we just keep thinking about that story we heard or that experience that we witnessed. This can be what we call rumination. We just can't turn that part of our brain off. It's just kind of spinning around. We're maybe either thinking about it or we're replaying, or even if we weren't present and we heard the story, we might be kind of almost fantasizing or imagining what that would have been like for that individual. We may experience flashbacks where we feel like we're reliving that experience, especially if we were present in it. And oftentimes it can show up in our dreams. So we're thinking about it so much during the day, we might start dreaming about this particular client or this particular story. Sometimes it's just a replaying, But also sometimes we might imagine or kind of fantasize about being the hero in that story. Oh, if I had only been there, I would have done this and I would have said that and I would have protected them somehow. If maybe we were there, we might feel a lot of blame, guilt, shame, anger at ourselves. Why didn't I do something? Why didn't I? And we talk about this kind of bystander guilt that we might be experiencing, which sometimes there might have been an experience where there was an action step that didn't get taken, but it's specifically defined more when we did what we needed to do and it was just a really hard situation, and yet we still feel really guilty for that. We might avoid situations that remind us of that story. We might have a hard time going back to a specific hospital or room, specific neighborhood if we were part of a home birth or we visited that individual. Avoidance behaviors can actually show up in a lot of different ways. Sometimes it might be we avoid talking about it. We don't even want to think about it. We kind of push that away even though it keeps popping up. We might keep ourselves really busy so that we don't have time to think about it. Or we might avoid emotional topics with our clients. We might not talk to them about, how are you? How have you been doing? Tell me your birth story. Because we're afraid of tapping into that particular scary, or what if something else comes up? You're also going to notice a shift in your mood, where you feel more angry, irritable. You might feel really sad or rage-filled, specifically about that person. And you might notice that you're becoming really overly involved with them. You're doing a lot more than you would usually do for that person, maybe connected to that guilt, maybe feeling like you need to fix or solve something. If this goes on, and actually we have a separation, if this lasts about 30 days or less, we call it an acute stress reaction. So this was really powerful and impactful, but if it naturally kind of subsides on its own after less than 30 days, that's considered different than if it lasts longer than 30 days, where we really start to see that vicarious trauma starting to settle in. That's when we might start seeing negativity, pessimism, cynicism around the job we're doing, around the system, really take on this negative mindset. And it's actually the combination of avoidance, changes in mood, those intrusive memories or thoughts, and inappropriate responsibility, feeling like we have to fix it, that kind of is the package that we include in vicarious trauma.
And if someone is listening and they're resonating with this, they're feeling that they see themselves in what you're saying, what should they do or what can they do?
Absolutely. Great question. The first thing that I want to mention is that there is actually a really great online screening. Maybe if you're a little bit unsure, you're like, ooh, some of that does resonate. And some of it, I'm not really sure. There's a really great screening. I passed on the link to you, and it's going to be in the show notes. But this screening actually gives us, it's an online screening, completed online, and it gives you the score for both burnout and compassion fatigue, but also your risk for and signs and symptoms of vicarious trauma. So if you're not really sure, or if you think this might resonate with you, the screening is called the Professional Quality of Life Scale. And it's a really simple couple of questions that can really give you a lot of information. If either you're feeling like, yeah, this really resonates, or you get the scores back from that and it's higher than you want it to be, luckily there is a lot that we can do. If you notice that maybe these symptoms are relatively new, you started feeling this way relatively recently, within the last 30 days or so, then we want to lean into our community, our connections, finding someone that you trust, either in that birth world or someone who takes on that mentorship role, and to do a really good debrief. when we're doing this debrief, there's a couple of things that are really important. We need to, one, get a chance to just tell our own story in the same way that individuals who might be telling their story to us need a chance just to express what is going on, tell their story, and have someone provide that empathetic and compassionate response. We need that as much as the individuals we're supporting do. Then we need that acknowledgement that we have done the steps that need to be done. These are the things you did right. You've done more than enough here because you did X, Y, and Z, which is again why it's really helpful to find someone who is in this same realm, mm-hmm. who can say, yeah, they know what needed to be done in that. And then have a little bit of space for discussion around what could I have done differently? How can I learn from this? Is there anything else I need to do now? And help you identify what action steps you might need to take from here. What are those next steps that are going to help you feel like you have resolved that piece? It might be really helpful and needed to address the anger or rage that can come up in a safe way. This can be kind of in writing out a letter to, maybe it's the system, maybe it's to the universe, writing out that letter and getting a chance just to express that or to talk it out with someone or to find a punching bag and just release that rage somehow. It's a bit of a cathartic release for that. Once we have done that, we want to actually, it might seem a little strange, but we want to reconnect with the purpose. Why do we do this work? Why do I put myself in a position where there is a risk for feeling how I feel? We know that most birth workers do their work because it feels purposeful. They feel passionate about it. So finding ways to reconnect with that, hearing positive stories, re-engaging with the part of the work that you love, reconnecting with people you did your training with that were excited and passionate. This is going to help you feel more, to help with the cynicism and pessimism that can come. Oh yeah, there's a reason I do this. If it's been more than those 30 days, or you feel like maybe you've been dealing with this for a long time, it might be beneficial to connect with a professional who can help you process some of those traumas. If we haven't been connecting with, if we haven't been addressing that vicarious trauma, and especially maybe if we might have multiple of these experiences piled on top of each other, it can get complex and we can start to develop signs and symptoms of burnout. Start to develop signs and symptoms of that compassion fatigue, and it gets a little bit complicated. Meeting with someone for even a couple of sessions can be incredibly powerful in untangling all of that and helping you come back to feeling prepared, excited, and motivated for the work that you're doing.
I think that's really important to know that there is, you know, ways that we can help ourselves, and particularly if it's early days, you know, in relation to what's going on, but that if it is going on a long time or it's really impacting on our quality of life, that yeah. professional help is there, available, and that we should take it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And unfortunately, one of the most common things that I see from individuals who might have experienced vicarious trauma and are experiencing all the ripples that come from that, they get to a place where they say, I'm just not made for this work. I'm not cut out for it. I shouldn't be doing it. And they end up leaving the sector. They end up finding other, I'm just going to go get a desk job. And it's a real loss, because mm-hmm. it's not that these individuals are not capable and motivated and passionate. They're just experiencing the symptoms of vicarious trauma, which is treatable in order to get you back to feeling like you.
And that's the important part to remember as well, that it's treatable, that you don't have to mm-hmm. live like this. And, mm-hmm. You know, for me, it's speaking to people, it's, you know, what would you do if your client was telling you that they feel this way? Mm-hmm. You would refer them on, you know, so refer mm-hmm. yourself on if you need it.
Yes.
And because you deserve just as much as everybody else does.
Mm-hmm. I cannot agree with you more with that statement. I absolutely do. We are often especially in the helping professions, really good at providing that empathetic support and really encouraging people to take care of themselves, and kind of notoriously bad at caring for ourselves along the way.
Yeah, 100%. So Rebecca, thank you so much for bringing us through that really important topic. If people want to find out more about what you do or supports that are available, where can they find you?
Absolutely. So in the show notes below, I believe, is included my socials. I am active on Instagram, and I post all sorts of good pieces around information about perinatal mental health, around birth trauma, about those experiences, everything from fertility to parenthood. My website is also a great resource for some information. And there are pieces for individual or couples counseling, a referral, or if someone you know is looking for that. I also provide consultations. So if you have a particularly sticky client or want some more information, you're welcome to contact me, and I do provide consultation. But I think the most exciting piece is, not only am I really passionate about supporting parents through this transition to parenthood, which the journey is clunky and messy, even in the best of times, but I'm really passionate and excited about education and training and resourcing the individuals who are supporting those parents. So I'm going to be launching here in the next couple of months a training platform where there are going to be trainings for anyone working in the perinatal period who want to know more about how mental health challenges, what's normal and clunky, what might need a little extra support. And that is going to be showing up here in the next couple of months. In the meantime, I do have a free recorded webinar that you can watch about signs and symptoms of perinatal mood and anxiety disorders and a few of my favorite screenings. And the link for that, I believe, is included in the show notes as well.
Great. Thank you so much, Rebecca. It was absolutely lovely chatting with you, and such an important topic, as I said. So for everybody listening, if you are feeling that any of this is resonating with you, please reach out to somebody who can support you with that and fill up your own cup until it's overflowing. So until our next podcast, I look forward to chatting to you all again soon. Bye. If you enjoyed or benefited from today's podcast, please leave a review on your favorite listening platform. And if you need help in standing out as a birth or postpartum worker, download our free guide, 10 Steps to Stand Out and Get More Bookings. The link is in the show notes.